Happy Friday, everybody. My name's Indy, and the gentleman next to me is Mr. Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, who is our beautiful sponsor for Indie Game Business. And welcome to another episode of Indie Game Business. We've got Renee Gittins, and today the title is An Indie Game from Conception to Completion and all of the stuff in between. And they're gonna discuss some amazing things, like all of the games that got launched at the exact same time that their game got launched. And that's amazing. And how to deal with all that fun stuff. So
re-released. Indie Game Business. Re-released.
Re-released. Amazing.
So welcome back, Renee. We realized it has been 4.5 years.
Since don't forget to unmute Discord, everybody.
I know. Yes. Hold on 1 second. I always do this.
Well, it's the opposite of me.
Do I need to as well?
Yeah. You got to unmute too. There you go.
All right. There we are. We need like an auto unmuter. So it's been 4.5 years since we've had you on the show. We realized that today, which made me feel even older because that means we've been doing this show for like over 5 years. And that's...
I've been at one of the conferences since then, I believe. I've spoken at one of your conferences since then.
Yes, that's true. That is very true. That's wonderful. So tell us what's new. But no, let's start where we always start. So for the folks that do not know you, tell us how you originally got into the industry and then walk us through your career up to this point.
Oh, okay. That's a long story, but I'll try to.
It's all good. These are always the best stories.
Hi, my name is Renee Gittins. I am a game developer, currently an indie game developer. And I didn't realize I could be a game developer until my senior year of college. I was working on graduating with an engineering degree with a focus in mechanical engineering and project management. And when I learned my senior year that video games are something I could make and game developers are cool and giant nerds just like myself, I was like, man, I really wish I had gotten a CS degree. But alas, despite my attempts, I started out in the biotech industry as a system and design engineer. During those initial few years of my career, I taught myself programming and began volunteering in my spare hours for indie studios, both as a producer and as a server developer. And then when I left biotech, I recognized I really needed to create a portfolio. I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a producer, an engineer, or a game designer, and I had never really done game design outside of a few simple board games, so I decided to try to design a game and then make that a portfolio piece so I could apply for jobs. I was frustrated with the standard in games that you are rewarded for slaughtering every fluffy bunny you see, but you're supposed to be a hero. So I wanted to create a mechanic that encouraged more considerate engagement in killing. What I came up with was making aggressive actions take resources. I considered a karma system, but it felt too contrived, too black and white. So it felt like a resource system would sort of naturally discourage players from going around and killing like lower level creatures once they had gotten past that point. I love fantasy, particularly high fantasy. So I wanted to do some sort of fantastical game. And so I felt that using resource management in the creation of potions to use as spells was the appropriate solution for the problems that I had with combat and heroics and senseless slaughter. And so I drafted the concept for a game called Potions. And so I started working on that as a portfolio piece. I initially created a crafting system in C++ because I was trying to ramp up my C++ skills. And then I went to a conference called Unite, which is hosted by Unity. And I got to hear about the Unity engine, which I'd previously used before, but I was very much like a engineer, and I was like, ooh, GUIs are awful. Like, I much prefer coding everything. So I had been doing like Cocos 2D work mostly prior to that. And I was like, fine, I'll give Unity a shot. I'll do my prototype in Unity. And then after 9.5 years, I shipped a game called Potions Curious Tale. But I had a whole career on the in-between. So I did kickstart Potions of Curious Tale and was able to raise enough money to hire contractors to help me with art and audio, but I didn't raise enough money to pay myself. So I needed jobs, and I have worked all sorts of jobs. I initially started doing mostly contract because I wanted to keep a decent amount of time to work on potions. So I was at several different points. I was a freelance games journalist, the marketing coordinator for Xbox Games with Gold, a technical producer for various indie studios. Eventually, I realized that managing a bunch of contract jobs was more overhead and less consistent pay than just working a full-time job and finding spare hours outside of that. So I went full-time into the games industry, having basically built up a portfolio through my work, both with the IGDA, where I volunteered for, as well as my other networking and endeavors in the games industry. So I was able to get a job at a VR studio as a technical product manager, where I was both doing project management as well as product development. And then one of the reasons I got that role was because I wrote a very early paper called Social Virtuality Best Practices, which helped promote preventing harassment in VR, which was actually not considered when most people made multiplayer VR games initially. So So while I was a game journalist, I was covering the Oculus release, and then I was harassed at an Oculus event in game. And I was like, wow, if I'm being harassed here, there is undoubtedly people going to be being harassed online. I should probably tell people to consider this, because like all the game developers were like thinking, oh man, this is really cool technology. Look at how much people can interact with each other. They weren't like, oh man, this is really cool technology. Oh my goodness, how much can people interact with each other?
They just not notice Second Life at all and the whole flying penises?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm not really surprised. I don't know why I'm acting like that. I'm not surprised at all. But yeah. Oh my God. All right, yep. So I'm sorry.
It's fine. Anyway, so I did that. I also became a solutions architect for I call it an AI middleware company. It was very like machine learning AI, not what people are currently considering AI. And it did chat moderation assistance. It didn't actually do the moderation. It helped moderators. And the part I was working on was the character engine, which was making it easier to script dynamic dialogue for characters so that not every guardman had been an adventurer like you before taking an arrow to the knee. At that point in time, I had also continued my IGDA volunteering and was on the executive board of directors when our executive director stepped down, who's the head of the organization. And I was like, man, I really want to give back more to the industry that has helped me so much. So I applied and was appointed as the executive director of the IGDA and managed that for almost 3 years. I got about 6 months to ramp up before the pandemic hit. So that was good fun times. But I'm really proud of what we were able to do at the IGDA to support game developers. We actually created the Game Development Crisis Conference in like 3 weeks and hosted it in early April of 2020 to provide game developers with free resources and knowledge about technical remote working best practices, management remote working best practices, mental health, like tools and tricks, especially when, you know, being trapped in your house, how to manage a community through crisis. And and Nat helped me with that. Nat's amazing. And then after working with the IGDA for almost 3 years, I felt that the organization was in a good place. I had just hired Jakin, and he's now the new executive director. So I had definitely planned him to be my like potential successor when I hired him. And I wanted to get more back into the game development side of things. So I had been talking with Phoenix Labs and was hired as the general manager of Phoenix Labs Vancouver, which is about 155 person studio, the creators of Dauntless and then Fae Farm. And after a really wonderful and wild stint there. I actually helped lead the organization through a expedited M&A process that led to an investor-backed management buyout. That's the technical term. I have that down. I was like, wow, I really should finish my indie game. So I had the time and the funds in order to do that, and have spent the last year working on that. So I started up on Potions full time May of last year, and then shipped it March 7th this year.
And so why did you decide to make an MMO that was going to take you 10 years to create?
It's not that big. Yeah, I think the main issue was I never intended for it to be a commercial product, right? It was just a portfolio piece that was an idea. So if somebody said, hey, design your first commercial game, I would have certainly picked a game format that was more succinct. Not have a content heavy, story heavy, mechanics heavy, puzzle heavy game with unique bosses and monster interactions, because that's big.
So, I mean, it's hard just to simply launch a game on a regular 2-year schedule, 1-2-year schedule, and keep up with trends in the industry and gameplay mechanics. But over the course of a decade, even though you weren't working on it the whole time, full time, how did you stay on top of, okay, what's new? What's considered the norm in everything from design to, I mean, monetization? You weren't doing a free-to-play game, so you don't have to worry about that as much. But how did you keep it current all the way through?
Honestly, I didn't.
Oh, well, that's the easy way to do it.
Yeah. So I kept my marketing current. So I definitely made good use of resources around marketing. I have consumed your content, the indie game business content. I've consumed Game Discover Co. and How to Market a Game articles, and talked with all my friends to stay up on marketing trends, as well as to be aware of my audience, which does tend to be women, and particularly younger women, girls even. So obviously, whatever trends with the kids depends greatly on what year it is. So I didn't really have to worry about it until this last year. And I made sure to spend a lot of my time over this last year ramping up marketing, ramping up TikTok, where I did feel there was a decent amount of engagement with my audience. One of the things that people note when they play Potions is it definitely gives like old school adventure game vibes, but it has a lot of fresh mechanics and approach. So I definitely studied other games when it came to things like controller use. I'm a PC gamer, so my use of controllers is like pretty awful. And that's definitely something I had to intentionally research. I even sent out surveys to friends and to players to get their like feedback and opinion on things. But for the most part, the mechanics in game was what I wanted to make it. I was not trying to keep up with current industry trends, though the industry trended towards me. Everybody's playing like witchy games these days. The most of those are witchy economy games, whereas like my game's like a witchy adventure crafting, like exploration, almost like action-y puzzle-y game, which I think is actually perfect. Like the timing is pretty good because everyone loves these witchy games, but it has a very different mechanics approach than most of them.
You know, it's like clothing choices that people my age, it's like we still have clothes that we didn't get rid of 10 years ago, and now they're back in fashion.
Again. It's been really convenient. I could pull out like my flared jeans and they're like, I'm cool again.
Get the total grunge vibe going again, and we're completely good to go. So you talk about ramping up marketing and TikTok in particular. How did you approach marketing? What were you ramping up? What did you do to market Potions up to the launch?
So I did a lot of exploration to see what would work best and a lot of study. I decided that launching a demo of my game was going to be beneficial, and I made sure that I had a marketing ramp up for the launch of that demo to try to get as much reach as possible. I launched the demo in September, so I used it both as a marketing mechanic as well as a playtest mechanic, but I wanted to make sure that it was quite polished by the time I launched the demo to ensure that people didn't decide they hated my game before actually seeing the proper game. So I had done a bunch of previous play testing with my Kickstarter backers through an alpha and a beta. When it came to marketing, I tried every single channel possible and then honed in on the channels that worked best. So I was posting on YouTube and Reddit and Twitter or X and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. And I found that Reels and TikToks were the ones where I was getting the most traction. And so that is where I ended up putting my most amount of focus. TikTok for me has gotten by far the most traction for good and bad. So usually I would create and edit my videos on TikTok since it also has the captioning functionality, and then stealthily export those to do Instagram and Facebook Reels and YouTube Shorts if it was short enough.
Nice. So let's talk about the bad. So you launched on the same day that EA decided to dump their entire back catalog onto Steam.
I did.
Let's digest that. Tell us what happened, the reaction, what did you do, all that sort of fun stuff.
Yeah. So for context, in my preparation for the launch of my title, I was looking at ideal launch dates and I picked International Women's Day. I know I say I launched my game on March 7th, which is the day before International Women's Day in my time zone, but it is actually International Women's Day for the half of the world that starts earlier. So that's why I picked that date. So it could be available for all time zones during International Women's Day. As a game developed by a woman whose main audience is women, that features a girl and many women, I thought that that was an appropriate sort of nod to what I was doing. And with all of my research, I found you should get on Steam's new and trending, which is very important for launching an indie title in order to be a successful, if you have about 7,000 wish lists, potentially 10,000 if there's more competition. I went into my launch day with 21,500 wish lists,
nice.
Which is 2 to 3 times the amount that one would expect to need to get on new and trending. And using SteamDB to look at all of the upcoming games, I could forecast that I was going to be on Steam's new and trending page for 4 days, the front page of Steam with new and trending for 4 days. That would provide me each day 1 to 2 million impressions, a few thousand wish lists, and hundreds to thousands of sales, which is necessary when you're doing an indie game. However, what I didn't predict is a couple hours after I launched my title, EA, as Jay noted, dropped their back catalog of 11 titles. And though some of those, like the Command & Conquer series, were in a bundle, they still took up, each Command & Conquer took up a slot. So the 7 Command & Conquer games took up 7 slots on that page, which has between 8 to 16, depending on which your view you're looking at it in. Needless to say, I got immediately bumped off the front page from this and was absolutely devastated. It totally like ruined all of my lead up in marketing. You know, this is something I've been working on for almost a decade. I wasn't necessarily expecting this to be a financial success or a big financial success, but I was hoping to reach a wide audience. And because a lot of my audience aren't hardcore gamers, Steam's new and trending page, Steam's front page, is actually where a lot of them see and find games, just because that's how they shop. So I was seeing sales numbers about 30% of what I predicted and was feeling really bad. And I decided to complain about it online. So I took a screenshot of the EA stuff. Oh, and as a note, new and trending, unless like something absurd happens, like there's a huge amount of views suddenly for one thing, new and trending is date ranked. So it's based on when games are released. You have to hit like the base level for it to get on new and trending, and then it is ordered by release date. And that's why them launching a couple hours after me caused such an issue. Because if I had launched a couple hours after them, it would have been perfectly fine. anyway, yeah, so I made some really quick posts on Twitter and on Facebook and on Reddit. And then I also created a TikTok. And in the TikTok, I was just talking about the challenges of being an indie developer. And I said, you know, it sucks about being an indie dev that you can work 10 years on a project and then EA can shadow drop 11 titles and ruin all of your marketing. I never mentioned potions in that. I didn't mention it in the comments or anything. But at the end, I said, so happy International Women's Day. and a bunch of people who were riled up around Sweet Baby Ink and some other things, when TikTok decided to show that to them, they had very high engagement. And so TikTok decided to keep showing it to them. Unfortunately, their engagement was kill yourself, your game sucks, it looks like a trash Flash game. So I ended up getting thousands of hate comments and toxic messages, and somebody joined my game's Discord server and started spamming graphic porn, like really gross graphic porn, and they tried to review bomb my game, and I got death threats, and I had to put an anti-swatting notice on my house.
Holy so, shit.
Yeah.
I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was that bad. Oh my God.
It is almost to 15 million views. So.
Wow. So is this where we say that there really is such thing as bad press?
Now my sales are 40% higher than what I predicted. So ultimately, it helped. My mental health. It didn't help my mental health, but it did help exposure. So it certainly has been a challenge. And I've been trying to be gentle with myself. You know, the first 10 days were really rough because I was dealing with a massive amount of harassment, as well as hot fixing my game and, you know, trying to make sure that players were having the best experience possible. So it was quite draining, and I did not get good and proper sleep very much those first 10 days. Since then, I have continued releasing patches and updates. I just released a major content patch on Saturday, but I have been trying to prioritize my mental health more. So I've been gardening and sleeping and trying to go outside more. I had been working about 65 to 70 hours a week for the at least 6 months leading up to launch, which is not healthy and no one should do that. But it definitely had already taken a toll on me before getting bombarded with a massive amount of harassment.
It's the 60, 70 hour week thing is interesting. And it's because it's one of those things that I always say, we are our own problem in many ways, shape and form. And it's like, when you work in an industry that you love and you aren't just doing it for a paycheck. And, you know, whether you're creating a game or whether you're running a consulting firm and have the bright idea one night to start an education initiative, we do end up pushing ourselves way further than we should. And it's not one of those things. It's like I see the fire on Reddit, and there is a lot of problems of crunch culture. I'm not going to deny that at all, especially with big size companies. But at the same time, you know, even those of us who are doing it, we do it to ourselves as well.
Oh yeah. I have problems.
Yeah. We all do. And that's why we talk about this. And so aside, what have you done, you know, to pull back from that 60, 70 hours? Where do you go when you just go, okay, I'm done for the day? What changes have you made just in your own lifestyle to be able to get up and walk away like that?
Yeah. I mean, so usually I try to keep a normal 9-to-5 day. It flexes, you know, obviously. Like this morning I had some early calls. I have a really late night call as well, which means I'm going to try to take a few hours off earlier just because I'm working outside of work hours. I do think a 30 to 40 hour work week is probably the healthiest. And I think understanding your current state, your mental state, is important. Like, I haven't necessarily been working 40 hours a week the past few weeks because my mental health was bad. So I tried to take more time. Like, I took a vacation. I went out to the Olympic Peninsula and stayed in a cabin with bad internet because it was a good break from dealing with toxicity. I also think it helps to have bite-sized goals and to hold yourself to those goals, because I am somebody who I can work 10 hours in a day. And if I don't have a task list, I could have gotten a ton of things done, but I don't really consider what I got done valuable unless at the beginning of the day I write a task list. And then if I complete all those tasks, I'm like, oh, I did what I said. I'm okay now. For some reason, if I know what I'm supposed to get done and then get it done, but don't have a task list, I'm hard on myself. I'm sure that it's different for everyone, but that's one of the things that I've found helps with my mental health.
I have that. And then I have the days too that I realize that, okay, maybe I just needed a day to do half a task list, and that's perfectly fine. And I don't beat myself up for it anymore. Because it is, it's like, I always, you know, coming from the sales side of the industry, I've always had that mentality of there's always something you can do. You can always be like reaching out to somebody or doing a cold call or doing blah, blah, blah. But that shit ain't healthy. I mean, that's just reality right there. So, so when the shit hit the fan on TikTok and everything else, did you have community managers? Did you, or was it was just you? So how did you cope with that, other than just like sitting in a corner and trembling and
Yeah, I mean, I tried to engage with the positive comments and ignore the negative ones. That's still what I tried to do. There was a bunch of active management I had to do because people were posting really weird and gross and toxic things on my Steam community forums. TikTok was unmanageable. You know, the comments were coming in at a faster rate than I can read them, and certainly a faster rate than I can moderate them. At some point in time, I might slog through some of that just so that people who are telling me to kill myself get appropriate, you know, platform level discipline. But it's not necessarily worth my mental health to do that. I'm not motivated by like a sense of justice. I just hope that, you know, people, I hope that there's more empathy in the world, and people can consider that telling people to harm themselves or kill themselves is like just not a nice thing to do. I'm sure they know that, but still, I think it's very easy to be fooled by online distance and an anonymity. I don't think most of these people would be as nearly rude and toxic in person as they tend to be online. Anyway, so I basically prioritized. I managed my Discord server and my Steam community forums. I let social media do whatever it did. And then I tried to respond to what I could. I would do mostly sessions going through direct messages. I did miss some important direct messages from media and other companies on Twitter, because I forgot that message requests on Twitter are super hidden. So, whoops, my bad on that one. I was a little, it took me a couple weeks to remember that and get around to those. But for the rest of the part, I stayed pretty on top of direct messages, and then let the comments and everything else be what they were, while dealing with, of course, lots of press requests through email. Email is much easier to moderate. And I ended up actually getting lots of really kind fan mail through email too, which was helpful in keeping my chin up.
So, God, I still cannot believe how far that went. Because, I mean, but you did get some good press from
traditional
press. And they did help highlight the fact that, and I mentioned this last week, it was like we had Michael Brown from Vicarious on one of our conferences, and the headline of his talk was, "You can do everything right and still fail." And I feel like this is one of those, I mean, situations like this where you plan your marketing, you've got your stuff down, you've got your beats, you've got your social media, and then EA just go, there's the Command and Conquer series and everything else. And you're just like, okay, now what? but you were able to get some good press out of this that brought it back in line. And like you said, now you're like 40% more than you did. So more than, so yay.
Yeah, absolutely. I recognize that we humans are sort of tailored to focus on negatives more than positives. But, you know, logically, I understand that a lot of positive has come out of this. There's been a ton of support from games press, from other influencers, from other game developers, and from fans. And, you know, I have been keeping like a good feels document where I take a lot of the kindest messages and put them in there to review later.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I actually started that when I was at the IGDA because the IGDA is great. Leading the IGDA can often be a thankless job. So I would always like copy when people actually thanked me for the work that I did just so that I could reflect on that when I was feeling down about it.
I will neither confirm nor deny we have a similar document for IGD. So when I look around and I go, how I've been wasting the last 6 years of my life, I'm like, oh, wait, no, not completely. It's all good there. Looking back now at launch, is there anything you would have done differently, or is there anything that doing anything differently would have helped?
I mean, if I had known that EA was going to drop 11 games, I would have avoided it. I think I would have done
fine. We don't have that kind of information.
I know. I've gone to a fortune teller, maybe gotten a hint. No, I think that I tend to be a very measured person. You know, obviously it's kind of awkward that like 15 million people have seen me cry. So that doesn't make me feel like the most like measured person. But from people who know me, I tend to go into things with a lot of planning and preparation. I use data and logic and resources and recommendations to make my plans. And I don't think with the launch, there was really anything that I could have done differently aside from spend more time marketing and doing outreach and things like that. You know, that is an infinite hole. That is an infinite void you can pour all of your time into, and you will get occasionally some level of, you know, success from that. I actually think that's very important for game developers to understand. Marketing is screaming into a void, and you will scream into the void most of the time. And sometimes the void screams back at you and it's good. So I think that's one of the things I always found depressing about marketing is like one out of 10 of your efforts actually hits and connects with people. And maybe one out of 50 of your efforts goes properly viral. So all you can do is roll the dice more and try not to be depressed when the right dice roll doesn't go your favor, because the more you try, the more chances you have of success. Like I know a lot of sites and blogs cover the people who got lucky on their first roll. But that's just not how marketing normally works. It is very rare for that to happen. You have a slightly better chance on your first roll, but if you keep rolling and keep putting your time into it, you do have the chance of being successful. Now, when it comes to development, of course, I have a lot of learnings, but I learned those along the way. So unless I had the knowledge I do today back then, I don't think I could have done too much differently.
All right, we're starting to get questions. The void is speaking to us now, but it's a good void. It's good, not the void. Graphic like porn on your Discord.
This void is very,
yeah. Yes, that's yeah, that's not what you want. Did you feel like Instagram and TikTok had good click-through rates? And then expanding on that, was one you felt better than others? I mean,
yeah, both of them don't have click-through, so that makes it awful.
So it was 100%. 100% yeah. Click-through. That's nice.
Yeah. I think actually that's one of the challenges with both Instagram and Discord is that you can't put direct links in your posts. And people are really bad at the number of times where people are like, what's the game? And they could have just clicked on my profile and it's linked there. It's really high. People still post that. And I mean, that's fine. Other people usually answer them even before I get to. But yeah, I would say that the click-through rate is terrible for both of those platforms, but the potential impressions and views is really, really high. So even with a lower click-through rate, like the same video on YouTube Shorts has gotten like 3,000 views. On Instagram, it's gotten like 3 or 4 million, and on TikTok has got 15 million. So like, I don't care that that TikTok has a bad click-through rate. When you have 15 million views, if your click-through rate is 0.1%, it's still a lot of clicks.
So how do you I mean, of the ones you want to capture, obviously you don't want to capture about, you know, 10 million of those people, but the how do you capitalize on that then without, I mean, I know you can do a link if you spend money and you're actually doing an ad on Instagram.
Yeah. And that, I'm like,
really bad about buying random shit off Instagram.
Yeah. And there's actually a bunch of disadvantages if you have a business TikTok account on TikTok. It doesn't allow you to interact with like trending audio and things like that. So you actually need to consider the limitations of a business account before switching your TikTok over to a business account, because it can deprive you of some potentially good tools to use for virality. Now, I'm not a very good TikTok user, so I'm kind of bad at engaging with some of those. I've done a few more viral, like trending things, rather. I've used some trending audio and such. But for the most part, what I found to be successful personally is I'm a talking head that is honest about my experience of a game developer and why I'm excited about my game. I think particularly the younger generations, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they hate anything that comes across as marketing. Like, they are absolutely tired of having products subtly marketed to them. So the more honest and real you are with your content, the much better it performs on those platforms.
I love it. I mean, I have a 12-year-old. He's almost 13. And I know exactly, because it's like, you know, we're watching something on Hulu or whatever, and a commercial pops up. It's like, I'm almost 50 years old. I grew up with commercials. I understand what they are. What? And he's like, oh, my God. So when you say that they're fed up with it, I'm like, they haven't even had to deal with it like we did. It's like, and they're already completely, you know, anti anything that looks like advertising. So yeah, I get that. So is the, did you convert yours to a business account, or
nope.
Are you, okay.
It's personal. Yeah. And now that I'm viral enough, TikTok wants to me to like, see if I want to be a paid influencer, which is weird. I've been getting now like games reach out to me, game studios reach out to me, because they're like, you're clearly an influencer on TikTok. I'm like, I don't think I am the way that you think I am, honestly. Yeah. And
are they gonna pay you? I mean,
people have been offering to pay me for coverage of like their games and stuff. It's been, I'm like, I don't think you'll get the attention that you think you're gonna get if I do that right now.
Okay, but my audience isn't going to be what you think it is.
Yeah, I got my hate stalkers, like they're kind of bad.
Again, it's not that no press is bad press, because apparently some of it is. All right. So we're having questions and questions and questions coming here. This is really good. So from LinkedIn, do you believe platforms such as Steam should have better or clearer rules to avoid things happening like happened to you and other indies?
Yeah. I mean, I can't comment too much on how Steam platforms work. I do think that bundles, when launched at the same time, should be launched as a single item when they are being marketed. Especially when it comes to like really important categories for indies, like new and trending. I know some people don't believe that re-releases should be on new and trending. I can see both sides of that argument. It is a place for people to find games which are new on Steam, and those games were new on Steam. But the way that they each got their own listing, but can only be purchased together, was that I don't think is for the best of the community, right? Like, I think gamers were at a disadvantage from seeing this 7 Command & Conquer games listed separately rather than seeing a Command & Conquer bundle plus six other cool games that just came out.
I had a question myself and I completely just lost. Oh, did you do any paid marketing at all? Or was it all just grassroots?
I did hire Stride PR for assistance with PR management, but that was mostly to maintain my own sanity because I knew that if I had to like suddenly crunch, I needed somebody else doing press communications for me. So that was just more of like a bandwidth sort of thing.
But now you don't have to worry about that because you're an influencer and you have 15 million fans. So
no, I think I still need PR help probably. I mean, you know, there's a lot of relationships that PR teams have that are much harder to build up as an individual.
So from Crafty Game Lab, I'm currently promoting my game called Category 6 on TikTok. It gets thousands of views, but they're not translating into wish lists. Got any advice on how to turn those views into wish lists?
Make sure you have a relatable call to action. Most of my TikToks, I ended with something like, and if this sounds neat to you, please wishlist us on Steam. Thank you. Like something where it's like, oh, you are a person, you are asking me to support you through this very specific action. Like that can help. I will say like, don't expect a conversion rate of much more than a couple percent on TikTok. So if you're getting thousands of views, you should only be expecting like dozens of wish lists, which can be really rough, especially when you consider some of those views are going to be repeat viewers. So it's not, there's thousands of unique views each time. But yeah, I think a call to action, a relatable, sincere call to action, not like wish list the best game on Steam right now. Like if you're like more, hey, I'm a person, and if you want to support me, like please wishlist us on Steam. That's much more likely to get action from viewers.
So from our Discord, do you track your time? And if so, how do you track it?
No, not, I don't aggressively track my time. I am a very calendar-based person, though, so I generally have, if it's not in my calendar, it doesn't exist, which can be unfortunate sometimes, because if I don't put something on my calendar, I will forget. I do have a pretty good sense of how much I work, just because I tend to work almost purely in straight blocks. So, I mean, I take a break for, like, lunch and dinner, depending on how late I'm working. So if I'm like, this week I worked from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. every day, I'm like, okay, I was probably averaging about 11 hours a day. And that gives me a sense. I have mentioned to people that I have put in about 10,000 hours on potions. And the way that I came up with that number is I looked at the number of commits that I had made versus the time I had worked across a 6-month period, because I had a good sense of that. And then I compared that to the number of commits I had made on the project, recognizing that during those 6 months, I was both working on the project as well as things like marketing and writing and other aspects. And assuming those ratios were about the same, it meant that I had worked about 10,000 hours, because I have slightly over 4,500 commits on my game. And I know that in the past 12 months, I've worked around 3,500 hours. Don't do the math on that. It's really depressing. Trust me.
just accept the number and move on. We're not going to talk about this.
Yeah, about 3,300 of those hours were in 9 months. Yeah, so.
All right, so how did you, when you're doing everything, how did you structure time to do marketing? Is it like you sat down on Monday and said, I'm going to do all of this for marketing for the week in one batch? Did you do like a little bit every day? How did you fit that into the programming and actually making the game schedule?
I batch record things because I am a basement troll that does not like getting dressed. I live in pajamas and without makeup on. So hello, I am not like that today.
So do I. Yes, fair enough. I stopped wearing makeup years ago.
Generally what I do is when it comes to video content, I I batch record them. Occasionally I'll like put a jacket on or like change shirts, but I've gotten pretty lazy and just decided that people don't notice that I'm wearing the same outfit for 2 weeks of videos in a row. So I'll batch record them. I'll record like 40. I'll probably use 12 of them. Because as I'm editing them and putting them together, I try to only prioritize the ones that feel the best. And then I, after breakfast, usually will like go through, because around 9 to 10 a.m. PST is one of the best times to post things on social media for exposure. You can look at your analytics on whatever platforms you're releasing on and seeing when your audience engages with your content the most and change your posting time to be around that or slightly before it. But it's like a pretty standard rule that like 9 a.m. PST is a really good time to post things online.
All right, so next one from Discord. Do you enjoy being largely a solo dev, or are you hoping to work with a larger team in the future?
Cool. And thank you for phrasing it largely a solo dev. I do feel that there's a lot of oddity around people calling me a solo dev, because I'm absolutely not. You know, I certainly have contractors who have contributed to the game. Though there are some people who feel I didn't work on the game at all, which is weird and completely incorrect. Yeah, I would say that I'm very much largely a solo dev, but I have absolutely had wonderful help from very talented contractors. Going forward, you know, despite having managed very large teams, I think that I prefer not having the pressure of managing team members as much as possible. I think that one of the challenges with Potions is, because I did a Kickstarter, I had to get art and audio very early in the development process, much earlier than I would have normally done for production. And that meant, honestly, having to redo a lot of those assets, which is wasted money and time. There were a lot of learnings through the creation of those assets, but if we had had the timeline to take a more measured approach, I think we would have not had to do as many revisions on some of those. So in general, I think moving forwards, I'd like to maintain a very lean team, and I'm hoping to do a bunch of rapid prototyping and come up with game ideas and get them to a pretty polished state before bringing on any team members to assist with things like art and audio.
So another one from our Discord. How long did you have your demo up before you launched? And also, how did you drive up hype for the demo launch?
My demo was up 6 months before my launch, almost to the day. And I think that that period was helpful for getting feedback and exposure. I also had a decent amount of streamers. They were all smaller streamers for the most part, but that was great coverage. When I was marketing, I was leaning into the platforms that had done best for me. So I was hyping up interest on TikTok and even Twitter does relatively well for me when I'm posting it from my personal account. I will say, don't split your accounts like I did. I thought I needed a business account, and I really should have just been posting everything for my personal account the whole time. My business account doesn't have a huge traction, but my personal account does. And trying to post on my business account instead of my personal account just doesn't make sense. So in the future, I'm just going to use my personal account there. So I drummed up hype through my my fan base, which is mostly my Kickstarter backers, through social media. And then one of the best tools out there is called SullyGnome. And I don't know if anyone else has talked about SullyGnome. It's S-U-L-L-Y.
Oh, SullyGnome. Yeah. Okay.
G-N-O-M-E. And that is a website which lists streamers and influencers and the games which they have played. So if you're like, my game is kind of like this game, like Little Witch in the Woods doesn't have combat, but aside from that, it's actually quite similar to Potions in many ways, and it's done quite well. So I would put Little Witch in the Woods into SullyGnome and find all of the influencers who had covered Little Witch in the Woods. I would go through their channels and see if I could find any like interesting things about them. And I made a huge spreadsheet of influencers, what they had covered, and any notes about unique things I could say about them, like the name of their cat or something. And then I used that to create semi-personalized outreach messages, which had a much better hit rate than just like, play my game, generic letter. It was like, hey, I know you like cats. If you want to have a cat that's a companion, like Blackie or Black Cat is for you, then you should play Potions of Curious Tale, where like Helios is your cat, and etc.
Did you ever mention that your last name rhymes with kittens?
I say it all the time, but not in my emails. Yeah, anytime someone's like, Renee, how do you say your last name? I'm like, kittens, like kittens.
if you like cats, my name rhymes with that. So, yes. Next one. So, with more concerns about TikTok possibly being banned in the U.S., plus other concerns for social media platforms, what are your thoughts, contingencies, et cetera, in regards to the future of marketing efforts for games?
You should always market your games based on your audience and where they are currently. They will always be somewhere. You just have to find where that somewhere is. If TikTok is banned, I think that's unlikely, but if it is banned, that audience is going to go somewhere else. So maybe they'll use Instagram Reels more, or maybe a new platform will come up, or maybe YouTube Shorts will have more of a social component to it. I obviously don't have the answer to where they will be next if something like that happens, but they certainly will go somewhere. So I don't actually feel like it's so much a contingency plan as just dynamic iteration on marketing based on changes in your audience and their engagement locations. So it just happens either way.
I'm with you. I don't think TikTok's going anywhere either. It's just politicians being politicians. That's from Inspector Geek on YouTube. What do you think of Steam Next Fest?
Steam Next Fest is great. It is really a wonderful way to get additional wish lists, and it can be very beneficial to engage with right before your launch. It should be at least, you should not launch earlier than like 3 weeks before the end of Steam Next Fest. Like the first 2 weeks after Steam Next Fest get kind of like crowded and weird. But after that, it's pretty good. And you want to go into Steam Next Fest with as much hype and marketing and coverage that you can, because that affects your listing on the Steam Next Fest page, as well as like the reactions, right? If you do, you only get to do Steam Next Fest once for your game. So you should do that where your game is in the absolute best state it can be. You don't want to rush into Steam Next Fest before you have your launch date almost completely determined. I'd actually considered launching Potions of Curious Tale earlier in the year. And so I was looking at doing Steam Next Fest October and had prepped everything for that. And then when I saw how much press was getting wrapped up with Baldur's Gate and Starfield and other games that were coming out, I felt that Steam Next Fest was not the most appropriate one. And I actually, that's when I pushed my launch date back to March and decided to do International Women's Day. It's because I didn't think I could make the best use of the October Steam Next Fest. And so I had to use the February Steam Next Fest, which was pushing me into a March launch date.
You have to be very careful about Q4 in indie games.
Yeah, because, I mean, for that exact reason. Squashed.
So, looking back now, aside from the death threats, threats to for you to death yourself, mm-hmm. what?
I got death threats too.
Do you think holistically it was a good thing that you got swamped and you spoke up about it? Or do you think you still would have rather launched without EA spamming the charts?
I do think it is good, not necessarily specifically for potions, but for my, like, there are two things I am passionate about, right? I am passionate about games as a format, and I am passionate about uplifting others to pursue their dreams. So for the game side of things, like, I think it's nearly net neutral. Like maybe I got a bit more sales than I would have without that happening. But in terms of helping me have more of a platform to inspire and support others, I think it is a good thing because it allowed me to reach a bunch of people who have told me that they have felt inspired, who have found my other educational videos and work. Like my the three videos I've posted since the viral one have all been game education videos, and they have 20 to 40,000 views. Which is really, really high for that type of content. Again, some of those are haters, so that's fine. But it is...
User views.
It's providing information and inspiration to people from somebody who is not necessarily what a lot of people consider like a stereotypical game developer, right? Like, I want the next... Renee at 12, who loves video games and math, to see a person that they can relate to doing things that they could potentially love, talking to them about how to get started. Like, and with that regard, the virality of the whole situation is beneficial because it's given me more of a platform to reach out to others and provide them with the tools and resources and support and motivation. And just relatability that they might not have had otherwise.
And I mean, to be fair, you know, you said you're not really keen on having 15 million people see you cry, but at the same time, but this is reality in the industry.
Yeah, it's like, yeah,
this is the real thing. I mean, this is, we are people at the end of the day. We do have a life, family, feelings, all of this stuff. And you can't just like bottle that away in a press release. You know, it's one of those things that you did have the opportunity to show, hey, look, I'm a real person. I worked on this shit for 10 years. And this was just absolutely 100% deflating that this happened. And that's perfectly fine. And that's good. Aside from however many people who just wanted to pounce all over everything because they have nothing better to do with their lives.
Yeah. And I've tried to be very emotionally honest with my game development journey. I have a very old devlog series that I started from the day I decided to work on potions as a potential commercial product. So it starts out with me like discussing that I'm going to pursue this and how scary it is and what I'm hoping for, and that I was creating this vlog series so that people could see the experience from day one. Because I think that very few people have recorded that, especially at the time when I started it. And in the fourth vlog, somebody was telling me that I was making a Minecraft clone on Reddit and like giving me a bunch of shit. And I felt like really bad. It's absurd to anyone who plays potions to think that anyone would think it's a Minecraft clone. But I was like really upset by this. And so like I kind of cried in that vlog too. And I was talking about like the challenges of people being mean and putting yourself out there and working on something and like frustrations. So it's not that I have been too embarrassed to share my emotions before, but man, when it's 15 million people and that's their only impression of you, it feels a little different.
Well, it's not our only impression of you because, you know, it's, we know you've worked hard at this and I've known you for years. And I remember the jacket when we were doing the AT&T thing, you would have a jacket, you know, on your seat and you put it on and you did, you looked instantly way more professional than the rest of us did because you had a jacket that you put on and you looked like a pro instead of like us in our pajamas. Going back, is there anything you would have done different?
I don't know. I probably would have tried to do even more marketing. I would have tried to upkeep more communications. I had a really hard time with Kickstarter because every time I posted a Kickstarter update, I had some Kickstarter backers who would be reminded that I existed by the update and then like leave really not rude, but nearing on rude comments. Like, if this game ever comes out, I'm going to eat my bike. Or like, I guess it's kind of rude, right? Or like, you know, this clearly
it is,
was,
but
like,
it's at least original.
Steal our money. I'm like, guys, making a game's hard. I'm trying my best. I think there was some things that were very unexpected that I couldn't have necessarily planned for, that were really difficult. I lost one of my team members, who was my best friends, to an accidental fentanyl overdose on his birthday. I lost my cat to a really aggressive cancer a month before Potion's launch. Like, I don't have regrets. I don't have any reasonable regrets around those, right? Like, I wish I had been able to spend more time with him, or my cat. Both of them. They're both hims. So, or stopped it somehow. But I guess around the development, I feel like I was always doing the best I could. And, I mean, that's all you really can do. And, you know, now I have more knowledge and more resilience, and I think I could have handled some of the trials and tribulations a bit better, but, you know, hindsight's 2020.
Yeah, it is. And this is why a lot of times we usually recommend people. It's like, get a game out, understand everything that's going to go on through it, because you're not going to realize things like this until it's done. And you've gone through it. And yeah, it's, on one hand, you have the, you know, this is where we are now. And if I hadn't done everything, if I had done something different, I might not be there. But at the same time, you do learn this stuff. It's like, I learned that lesson way too late. I know a ton of people in this industry who have learned the burnout, crunch, overwork, no work-life balance lesson way too late. But how else are you going to learn it? I mean, we can only tell people so many times not to do it. They have to do it a lot of times before they realize it.
This is going to be like the weirdest comment probably. So I know people have different feelings about ChatGPT. I highly recommend, if you are ever feeling like distraught about something in your life, talk to ChatGPT about it. Like, give it the full context. It tends to be very empathetic. Like, when I was dealing with my cat dying, like, I started like asking it questions about, you know, the process. I started telling it how I was feeling, and it was basically like, it's okay to feel your feelings. Yes, this is normal and expected. Like, it was very considerate. Like, I know that sometimes it can be hard for us to feel like we are burdening other people, particularly like if we wake up at 3 a.m. with concerns. So I recommend trying out AI. Don't use it in replace of a therapist. You absolutely need mental health professionals as well, in terms of supporting through challenges. But it is actually a really great resource to look towards if you're just looking for like in the moment validation and support.
Not dystopian at all.
I'm sorry. It works. It's very well tuned for it.
That is interesting though, because I had never thought about that. All right, one last question, and then we'll let you go, you know, to work on maintaining that work-life balance. Do you like the current stage of the industry, and what are your thoughts on the future in terms of keeping this as a career?
Oh, the industry is a mess right now, obviously. I think that there has been a lot of turmoil, partially from things that were avoidable and partially from things that were not. I think many companies overexpanded during the COVID increase of game spending, and they expanded at a unsustainable and unreasonable rate, which then encouraged them to do layoffs. But I think there are other reasons for it. You know, our economy is based on assuming endless growth. And so like publicly traded companies need to prove endless growth. So they decided to let go of people to reduce their expenses when they couldn't increase profits widely enough, which I think is absurd. But unfortunately, as a publicly traded company, to an extent, it can be a forced reality. I think it is poor decision making, but that's what people do often. I think that overall the economy is potentially on the edge of a stagnation or depression. And you can see that with how the federal government is currently managing interest rates, which is scary. So, like, I don't know what impacts that's going to have for games. Oddly, entertainment and a few other industries do quite well during depressions. So, you know, maybe that's not actually the worst for the games industry, but it kind of sucks for the rest of reality. So that's not something I'm looking forward to. On the positive side, I do feel like the game industry is likely to start recovering this year, even if the economy does not as much. I do think that the game industry has improved a lot when it comes to work-life balance, when it comes to support of all genders and minorities and people from different backgrounds. And I think there is a better understanding of diversity and inclusion and equity. Are we perfect? No, not even close. I think we only have like 24% of game developers are women identifying. But every single year, I think it is getting better overall. So I have high hopes for where we will be going in the future. I will always be a game developer personally. You know, even if for some reason I am forced out of making this my full-time job, I will certainly have it as my side project, my hobby, because I can't stop. It's just too fun. It takes too many disciplines that I love in my and combines them together into my favorite medium. So I can't avoid wanting to engage with it. I've always been a creative person in that regard, at least. Yeah, that's my overall summary.
That's, I'm with you. It's like, yeah, this industry is completely screwed up in many ways, but at the same time, I can't imagine doing anything else. This is what I love. And hell, I've been doing it so long now, I don't know if there's anything I could do anyway. So it's like, I'm probably stuck here. Thank you so much. I mean, you are such a wonderful and fun person to hang out with too, as we got to bond over nachos in Vegas. Everybody go check out Potions, A Curious Tale. And if you go, I've actually got it pulled up right now, and you can see Renee playing it with the witch's hat on, which is, I mean, really.
That witch's hat right behind me.
Yes, exactly. It's right there. And it's way bigger on your head than it looks like back there on the dresser. But yes, thank you so much. This has been awesome. And you are always welcome back anytime you want to share what you know.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And for anyone who is interested in checking out Potions, the demo is like 2 to 3 hours long, and the demo saves load into the full game and retroactively give you the achievements you've earned. So there's no risk in playing the demo. That's just like a free.
That is brilliant. Why don't more people do that?
I don't know. It wasn't that hard to implement, honestly.
Dan?
Yeah, Renee, thank you so much for your openness and your authenticity. It's amazing. Like, we really got deep into some deep stuff, and we just thank you so much for that. Not only on your platform, but on the show and just what you do all around. It's amazing. So thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. If you're not on our Discord, I don't know why you're missing out. Discord.gg/indiegamebusiness. And all of our links, you can find out our merch. You sign up for that newsletter where you get a publisher list and an investor list. It's all at indiegamebusiness.com. We're going to be back next Friday and the Friday after that and the Friday after. We've got stuff scheduled all the way into June, which is super exciting. I'm not sure who is next Friday at the moment, but
we had a change. So honestly,
shift. Yeah. We had a little shift, but there will be something. So have an amazing weekend, everybody.
Thank you.